Blog Talk Radio.
Selling nut, hard nut. Anybody here wanna buy my nut? Selling nut, hard nut. I've got nuts for sale. Selling one for five, two for ten. If you buy 'em once, you'll buy 'em again. Selling nuts, hard nuts. You buy 'em from the peanut man. Nuts, hard nuts. Anybody here wanna buy my nuts? Selling nuts, hard nuts. I've got nuts for sale. They tell me your nuts is mighty fine, but I bet your nuts isn't hard as mine. Selling nuts, hard nuts. You buy 'em from the peanut man. Selling nuts, hard nuts. Anybody here wanna buy my nuts? Selling nuts, hard nuts. I've got nuts for sale, and they tell me your nuts is mighty small. Best to have small nuts than no nuts at all. Selling nuts, hard nuts. You buy 'em from the peanut man.
How's it going, everybody? It's Puck Chatter Radio here on Blog Talk Radio. .com. I am Chris Block, writer, editor, and keeper of thethirdmanin.com, puckchatter.com, here on this fabulous Monday night, October the 29th, 2012, 8:02 here in Chicago. How you doing, Superstar?
I am well, and I love that song more and more every time we play it.
On tonight's program, this program, we are talking, maybe, NHL lockout. Tell me it's going on right now, Superstar. I've heard through the grapevine that there's no NHL hockey going on.
I've heard the same.
Yeah. The Ice Hogs, over the weekend, they've got their act back together and are surging in the AHL Western Conference. But a few of those Hogs aren't doing so well or is feeling as well as you'd hope. We're going to talk about it. Also, listener emails, things we'll be doing to kill time during the NHL lockout should be dangerously interesting. Maybe some presidential election talk, and also my boner. But Superstar, what you been up to later? I haven't seen you since the big wedding.
Recovering from said wedding for a few days. It was a great evening that was enjoyed by, most everyone, but a fun time. How about you?
What I remember of it was cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I drank very heavily, and there's reasons behind it. And but it was good. It was a lot of fun.
I think the best part of the weekend, actually, for me...
Was you knocking on my hotel room door Saturday night at 1 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, looking for a drinking partner, yeah. No, was actually on Sunday. We've gone in depth on your quest to lose your sunglasses. And I get this text, and I can tell your joyous, happy tone. And the text was, I lost my sunglasses, and I knew you were actually really happy about this, but it turns out you didn't lose your sunglasses. You kept leaving them at the table, and my wife rescued them, so now I have your sunglasses. No, I am not wearing them, but they are not lost. They will be returned.
I was looking all over for them on Sunday morning. I remember having them because after the wedding, we got ushered around from like place to place to place, and then at the reception, and the reception wasn't the same place as the hotel. So I had my sunglasses on, and I knew like all day, I was like, there's no way these things are making it back. These things are getting lost. and how you say, I like sitting at the head at the head table, and I put him down. But then for some reason, I kept picking him up and bringing him around with me. And then yeah, I guess I kept leaving them in places, probably subconsciously, like just so hopefully someone would pick them up and walk away with them. Because as we talked about before, I don't buy expensive sunglasses anymore because I always lose them. I mean, I'll buy a $150 pair of sunglasses. 2 weeks later, gone. So I've stopped that. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that anymore. So
it's
buy
it's not
like
worth it.
No. I just go. I buy truck stop sunglasses. But the sunglasses that I most recently purchased, I was in a hurry and I had an eye thing that morning, and I didn't realize until I'd purchased them and I'd got back in the car and broken the seal and popped them on that they were actually lady sunglasses. So but I refuse to just throw them away, lose them, or buy another pair. I must lose them naturally. And your wife screwed it up.
she screwed it up. She noticed that you kept leaving them on the table that we were, you know, congregating around. And so she picked them up and put them on, and she's walking around with them. And, and then, you know, I remember her putting them down in our hotel room. And I was like,
I was in your hotel room after the wedding.
Yeah. So, you know, it was like, you know, those are black sunglasses. And then, you know, an hour later, I get the text. I lost my sunglasses. And I felt really bad because I had to break the awful news. You know, no, they're still out there. So, well, you know, there'll be more attempts to lose them. And eventually, I'm confident that these sunglasses will be lost by, I'm going to go ahead and say December 1st.
Before we get on into the meat of the program, which again, we'll talk about the NHL lockout, Ice Hogs, Don Fear, Gary Bettman, listener emails, things we'll do to kill time during the NHL lockout, presidential election, my boner, and a whole bunch of other things. But before we get to that, and I thought about you today, Superstar, I want to talk about that in a second, but before we get to any of that, I do have I have to make a special announcement. I must here on this program concede defeat in fantasy football this week to the Superstar.
Yeah, you mentioned early in the week that, you know, I was catching you in a good week. You know, you had a couple guys who were inactive, so I don't think if those guys were even active, it would have mattered. I think I'm up by, I think it's close to three digits right now. So
it's not close to three digits. It's 68 points. I mean, you are beating me by 68 points, and you still have Frank Gore going tonight.
Right.
So my record, seven, well, now this being the eighth week of the season, my league-wide record, which stands at is 71 points, winning differential that I set in week five, breaking my own prior record of 68 points, which is what you've currently tied when I defeated the Muffin Stuffers 170-102 in week four. You, Superstar, and your Fresno Fish Eyes are currently beating me by 68 points. So I must concede defeat because all of my players are now they're on the bus heading to the charter and on back home. So I can't make a comeback. But it was the battle for first place, and you won. So congratulations.
Thank you. I've taken my lumps against you in the last, you know, 6 years or so that we've been done doing fantasy. So it's about time.
Yeah, and now you're 2-0 against me this season, so it's going to be hard for me to win first place. But I did think about you today, Superstar. I was up. I spent most of my day up in Northbrook. I was up there for some business meetings, but I was over by the Glencoe Golf Club, right there by the Chicago Botanical Gardens. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. And it reminded me of our big golf challenge.
Yes.
That we have not done yet because I've been
And we got to do it. It's not getting any warmer.
For those of you that may have missed it, at the end of August, Block came out of his 14 glorious years of sabbatical from the great game of golf. I came out of retirement, and I was great. And, yeah, I was great. And let me tell you something, Superstar. I don't think that we got the point across exactly last time that we talked about it. And I like to share it with some people right now. I strolled up to the golf course that day, that fine Saturday morning, the end of August, away from the game for 14 years. Superstar, let's together help me here, paint a picture. I strolled up to the first green in shorts.
Shorts, yes. Shorts.
Sandals
was the key.
14 years away from the game, I was wearing a shirt that I probably last wore in the year 1998.
No gloves.
Well, no, I get to that in a second. I had one club. I had a driver, and I did all of my putting that day. This is not a joke. This is not an exaggeration. I did all of my putting that day with a hockey stick.
Well, yeah. It's a putter. It's a putter, but it's in the design of a hockey stick. Yeah.
No, it was a hockey stick. It had a blade on it and everything.
Yeah. It was an actual putter, though. It wasn't.
You're right. It wasn't a Sherwood, although it may have been Sherwood on the side.
You weren't out there with an Easton, ultralight. It was a putter.
Yeah, one of these fancy one-pieces that the crazy kids use nowadays.
Yeah, I know. Wacky kids. But, yes, it was not a traditional putter. It was in the shape of a hockey stick.
Yeah. And
this guy gave you a putter because that was the one thing that gave you absolutely the fit.
Well, my return would have been even more impressive had I – because this is the way golf goes for me, and it goes exactly the way it does when I play Golden Tee. I hit the ball really far and pretty much on target. I slice it right a lot.
You generally keep it in the vicinity of where you're going.
Yeah. Well,
it doesn't go backwards or anything like that. You do keep it in the general realm of where you're trying to go, which, for a lot of guys, that's the hardest part. I struggle with it time to time, too. Uh-oh, where's that thing going?
Right. And then I get on the green with relative ease. But it's just once I'm on the green and I'm putting, I'm a very emotional golfer. And, if I can't get it in, right away, I start to get angry.
Yeah, no. You can't putt.
And then everything falls apart.
Yeah. Well, that's why, in golf, that's the thing, drive for show, but putt for dough. You make your, you make or break your score around the green and
Anyway,
you gotta work on that block.
Since we've made this challenge, we have not yet golfed, but I will say this. I have acquired more balls. I already had lots of balls. I've acquired more balls because I'll probably need them.
Yeah.
I have since bought a glove.
Also important.
I didn't have a glove. Now I have a glove. I bought tees. I have tees.
A tee?
Yeah, that's important as well. I have acquired
You bought one tee or, many tees?
No, a whole bag of tees.
Okay. I just you said tee, and I was like, I didn't know they sold tees in one pack.
I'm like a guy in Duck Dynasty. I must constantly have tee with me everywhere I go. I have 6 episodes on Duck Dynasty on my TiVo that I am getting to tonight, so we better hurry up here.
Yeah.
behind the Mighty Duck Dynasty.
I hate it when that happens. How's the effort in getting maybe clubs?
Clubs? Here's the deal. I talked to somebody, and I was talking to them about, because after we played golf that day, I had thrown my back all out of alignment. And I thought it had more to do with a unrelated thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but I think it had a lot to do with the fact that the clubs that I did use, we're sort of exaggerating a little bit when we say that Block just used the driver all the way through the course. There were other clubs that I was borrowed and that I used, but they were from, like, the guy's like 5'6", and I was using his clubs, and
right.
I'm 6'4". So, you know, and I, you know, my one thing I was at a place the other day, and we were just swinging. We had clubs and we were swinging, and it was commented on to me that I have very good mechanics, but I can just imagine with these miniature, like, mini clubs, and the fact that I was pounding beers like out of style, because it was 9 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. What else was I supposed to do?
Right. Well, you were on the golf course. You get a pass.
Yeah. That I probably did something to my back that day. So I have to go in, I think, and I have to go to a professional place and make sure that my clubs are proportionately sized.
That would be good. And you know, now is really, you know, now is the best time to buy clubs. You know, it's the end of the year now. Now is when you buy clubs. You get good deals right now on clubs.
But I will. Once I acquire all these things, and the clubs are really all I need now, because I even the other day I picked up a nice, cool golf jacket, like a cool weather windbreaker deal kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's nice. Not only am I going to whip your ass on the golf course, I'm going to look good while I'm doing it.
Okay, well... anytime you're available, I'm...
As you'll notice, yeah, I talk a lot of trash.
You do talk a lot of shit for somebody who's played golf once in 14 years. I think I'm up for the challenge. So anytime you're ready, you know, you work out the kinks in your back and you know, you're ready. You just let the superstar know and we'll go and... I'll whoop your ass up and down 18 holes and get drunk doing it.
You know, I got to talk about talking trash. I'll tell you a story, superstar. I think I've actually told you this story before, but for everybody listening. So, yes, I don't know when I started doing this, but I don't think I've done this my whole life, but especially of late, like, I do talk a lot of trash. And just not just like things that I'm not even good at. Like, for example, I met this really very good-looking woman recently, and we started to get talking and everything, she had mentioned that she was she's on the golf team on the tennis team at Northwestern. You know where this is going, right?
Yeah.
So, like, you know, she's in, like, you know, she's like a med student and stuff like that now. Well, I'm standing there and, like, you know, like, you know, we meet each other, we're talking and everything, and I all of a sudden I'm like, oh yeah, you could play tennis? I'm like, I could play tennis too, you know, and I start talking all this trash. I'm like, I challenge you to a tennis match. She's like, you play tennis? I'm like, yeah, I play tennis. Who doesn't play tennis? Superstar, I haven't played tennis since I was 14. So I talked myself into a corner, and so I had to go buy a tennis racket. I had to go buy tennis balls. I had to go like do the whole deal, right? So we go on this date, right? It was kind of like worked around a date.
Yeah, well, this is, you know, a twofold subject. This is Block's dating advice, as well as your trash talking subject.
Yeah. If you see a really good looking woman who's like 10 years your junior, you're out of your league to begin with, the first thing that you probably don't want to do is talk a bunch of shit to her. But that's what I did.
Especially in saying that you know she probably does really well and you do really, really poorly.
Yeah. So I challenged her to it. I challenged a girl that could have been a professional tennis player to a tennis match. And I hadn't played tennis since I was forced to sophomore year of high school. You see the logic in this, right? This is why I'm crazy. So the date comes, and the morning of, she said, this is kind of a side note, and it'll come into play later. The morning of, she says, can you bring Rutu? I'm like, can I bring Rutu? I'm like, all right, yeah, I'll bring Rutu. So I pick her up, and she doesn't want to go to the Northwestern court. She wants to go to, like a private deal or whatever. It's like, whatever, fine. So she starts calling around, and I'm like, wait a minute, we've got Rutu with us. We can't go into any of these private clubs. We're going to have to go find like an outdoor thing. So we find an outdoor thing. So we get out on the tennis court. Like, I'm already sweating bullets. Like, before we even toss the first ball or however you call it, right? I don't even know any tennis vernacular. You know, I'm already what's going to happen here? Like, I'm toast, right? This chick's going to like storm out of here. Like, you know. So, like, she hits the ball to me, and I hit it back to her, and she hits the ball to me, and I hit the ball back to her. And the third ball that she hits towards me, it's coming, superstar, it's coming straight for me, right? It's coming straight for me. Like, the ones that she hit before, I kind of had to, like, move to the right or move to the left for it. But this one's coming straight at me. So, I can't. Like, it's going to handcuff me no matter what. So I start backpedaling, right? You know, and I'm sort of, like, going real fast backpedaling, you know, and I've got my bad knee that, you know, doesn't have a tendon in it. So, like, I'm backpedaling. And just as I go to swing at it, like, I thought I had some sort of an angle to swing at it, I trip and I go ass over tea kettle right on the tennis court, right? Third ball she hits to me. So, like, of course, you can imagine she gets to see the most unflattering part of me, like just like that, right? So I'm laying out on the clay, right? And Rutu, who's chained to the fence, is going bananas because he sees Daddy take a fall. He's going crazy. He's trying to pull the fence because he's trying to get to me, right? She's like, oh, my God, are you okay? I get up. I got a little abrasion on my elbow, and I'm like, oh, yeah, no, I'm totally fine. I'm totally fine. You know, that tricked me, you know. So we kept playing tennis. But then we go and sit down. This is how crazy I am. So we're sitting down, and we're talking. And, like, in the first half hour that I'm talking to her, like, I pick out, like, 10 things that I already find wrong with her. Never mind that she's gorgeous and she's going to be rich one day. Like, I already decided that I didn't like her. After I challenged her to a tennis match, you know, and I got whipped.
You should have challenged her to, you know, a nice game of, I don't know, inline hockey or something. Is it something that you think she doesn't... You know, it would be one of those things that you would challenge her, and then she'd be like, oh, yeah, my brothers grew up playing hockey. I've been playing since I was six. And then she'd whoop your ass at that, too.
I don't know. She's a nice girl, though. She's a really nice girl. But, yeah, I have to concede that. I got my ass whipped. I talked a lot of trash, and I got my ass whipped in tennis.
But you got a date out of it.
I did. I got, well, two I got out of it. Let's see here. I'm going to vote tomorrow, Superstar.
Ooh, voting early.
Yeah, I got to, because what I thought, because I used to live in the suburbs, and I just, out of curiosity, I thought the last time that I had gone to the DMV that I had did the old switcheroo on my polling place, and I guess I was lied to at the DM because I asked the guy the question. I go, you know, can you do the old switcheroo on my registration? He's like, yeah, no problem. A lot of curiosity the other day. I looked, and no, I'm still registered to vote in Elgin. So, I mean, I can't. I have no time to drive out there. Was it going to be next Tuesday?
Next Tuesday.
Yeah, so I'm simply going to do the early vote downtown this week. So, and I'll probably do it tomorrow.
Better boy.
But this Saturday.
I catch a good break, you know. Moving up here, I found out last week the polling place is actually the elementary school across the street. So it'll be a nice, quick, easy vote for the superstar.
Are you registered there, though?
I am registered. I triple-checked that, actually, about a month ago. So I'm glad I did, too, because I wasn't sure.
Oh, Ice Hogs tie-in, because we do eventually talk about hockey on the show. Ice Hogs tie-in, next Saturday, the Lake Erie Monsters are in town. The Lake Erie Monsters of Cleveland. And at the Ice Hogs game in Rockford at the BMO, it is bobblehead night, but it is election bobblehead night. The first 4,000 people, so pretty much everybody's getting one. you get your choice. If you get there early, you'll get your choice of either a Barack Obama bobblehead or a Mitt Romney bobblehead. So they'll have 2,000 of each. They're very undecided in Rockford.
Well, you know, they gotta play to both sides. I saw those bobbleheads, by the way. That Barack Obama bobblehead is actually pretty creepy looking.
It's pretty good though. I mean, it's the Mitt Romney one. I don't think the Mitt Romney, if that's the exact, if that's what it's going to look like. Because sometimes they're, you know, it's like a first rendering, and the one that you get's a little different. Like. I don't think that Mitt Romney one looks like him at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Barack Obama one is actually really good, like you said. It's really close, but it's like I think it's just seeing him dressed up in the Ice Hog red, you know, it's just creepy looking.
If you want to check it out. And I'm speaking, of course, to the people listening into this conversation. Icehogs.com, check it out. And it should come up on the front page. It did today when I was on there. Oh, crap. All right. Superstar, if... I want to segue into something, but I don't know exactly how to segue into it. If it sounds like if I get too low or if I get too high, well, there it is. If I get too high at any point, my voice, just like mention something because I can't hear out of my left ear at all. And my left ear is usually my listening ear. I have an inner ear infection.
Yeah, you've been fine since we started.
Okay, good. There they are. The icehogs.com. It is the flash page when you go to icehogs.com. Mitt Romney is his stance. He looks an awful lot like Ben Smith, even though he's wearing 12 because of the election. I think that was the Ben Smith bobblehead. And they threw Mitt Romney on top of it. What exactly about Barack did you find unappealing?
Everything.
Okay.
I just thought it was kind of creepy. Like, I don't know. I think it's because it's so good. It's such a good rendering of him, that seeing him in the hockey gear it just didn't compute to me. It just looked weird and creepy. I think if it would have been worse, like it didn't really look like him, I don't think it would be nearly as creepy.
Anyway, I want to talk about my boner for a second, because Superstar, you and I had this conversation last night.
Yeah. We can, I mean...
But no, it ties into what we were just talking about. I have an inner ear infection, Superstar. And I don't know, maybe there's some doctors listening. Maybe I should give that girl a call back. maybe she'd be willing to help me with this one. That was terrible. I'd be interested to know, because it was just the other day. See, I'm so busy, Superstar. I didn't even realize until this morning that it just dawned on me this morning that I hadn't been aroused in the past 2 days, which is like, I mean, think about that for a second.
That's like decades for you.
Yeah. Well, I started to think about it, and I was wondering if, I mean, because usually I wake up rigid. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the past 2 days, that hasn't happened, and it's really been the past 2 days that this ear infection has kicked in. So I'm wondering if the ear infection has some sort of influence over the state of my penis.
I've never heard anything that would support it being connected, but, you know, maybe.
I'd be interested to know if anybody's listening and has any medical evaluation of that. I'm not willing to come in for an exam. I'm just wondering.
Thinking, because your ear is pretty far away from your penis.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's like inner ear infections. I used to get them all the time as a kid. You know, and it's like one of those things. Like sometimes when you get sick, like you're never in the mood. You know. So it doesn't, like, think. But I don't have, like, a fever, really. I mean, I guess I'm a little warm. Let me feel. Yeah, I'm a little warm. But I'm also drinking coffee. So I don't know. I don't know if it has anything to do with the other. But it just dawned on me, like, this last night, actually, as I was walking out of the BMO. Because I texted you. I don't know why it came to me as I was walking out of the BMO. But I was walking out of the BMO. I was like, damn, I haven't had an erection in, like, 2 days. And I texted you, and maybe because you were confused at what I was saying to you at first.
Yeah, well, it's not very often that I hear, I think my inner ear infection is affecting my boner. And for all of you who listen, this is the pay I get for helping out. I get to hear about his boners at a very odd time of the weekend.
What I usually do is I will merge two conversations into one. So Superstar said to me, he's like, because I was trying to get you to commit to a time to do the show. And I said, do you want to do a show on Monday night or is it better to do it Tuesday night? And I said, but I was also talking about this issue at the same time. And Superstar responds to me, he goes, what does your boner have to do with whether we do a show or not? which I thought was kind of funny. But
well, you can see how I was confused. that led to the conversation of what Block normally does during the show.
It's the reason why we can't go longer than an hour and a half, I got to tell you that. But now that tonight that I have an ear infection, we don't have to worry about that. We can go as long as we want.
Yeah. That's also the reason why we don't do live remotes.
The real reason why we've never done it, well, we haven't, after the first one, we haven't done a draft get together.
Oh.
All right. What do you want to talk about first? You want to talk about things we're going to do with the lockout, or you want to update the lockout? I don't think there's really anything to update.
No, I don't think there's much to update. They're not talking.
I do want to say this, okay? And it's going to get me in trouble. I'm not in trouble, but it's going to get people mad at me. But I don't care. I mean, if you listen to the last show that we did, you know. I don't understand. I mean, I understand. Like, I can see the state of mind or the rationale that certain people have about these sort of things. But I really don't. Thinking about things clearly, I really don't understand how anybody could be angry with the players about this, or could be blaming the players that there's not hockey right now. I mean, this is all about this. The entirety of this situation is about the owners being mad that they didn't have the foresight to see the growth that the league has been fortunate to receive in the past, specifically the past 6 years. And they're all sitting around kicking themselves. You know, the big eight are sitting around kicking themselves, saying, you know, we're the ones that are driving revenue, which they are. And we know who they are. And Rocky is one of them. You know, I mean, don't think that, I mean, Rocky may not be, he may or may not be a hardliner in this, but don't kid yourself. Rocky took this team from Peter because he wanted to be somebody important in this town. He wanted to be somebody that was recognized. He wanted the adulation, he saw an opportunity to take the team and get that. He wanted to be a public figure. But at the end of the day, he wants to make money. And he wants to do something that his father really wasn't able to do with consistency, especially after the economy of the league really changed. And Allan Eagleson got booted out, is, you know, make money consistently with this team. And the team is generating a lot of revenue. But they're paying back years of loans from Wirtz Corp so he can claim losses. But Rocky wants to make money year after year after year with this team. And so don't think that he's not on board with this stuff. He is. But the entirety of this issue is the owners are sitting around kicking themselves. Like, 8 years ago, they had the players exactly where they wanted them. They had an upheaval. They had, a significant enough portion of the players turned against Bob Goodenow. Ted Staskin made the deal for him with Trevor Linden being, you know, the guy that stood by his side and you know, influenced a lot of it. I mean, a lot of people blame Bob Goodenow for that deal. Bob Goodenow didn't even make the deal. Ted Staskin made the deal. But the owners are sitting around saying, oh, we had them exactly where we wanted them. And the owners did get every single thing they wanted, except they gave the players 57% of revenues. And it's not really 57%, because what 57% of revenue is the projected overall, you know, hockey-related revenue. It's not even overall revenue. It's hockey-related revenue. The players, and that 57% is how you arrive at the salary cap upper limit. So the players aren't even really getting that. But that being said, they gave them 57%, and then they didn't see the growth of the league, and then they see the NBA and the NFL, and especially the NFL. The NFL's Players Association is weak just because of how strong that league is. The players are so interchangeable. But they see that those two leagues go with this 50-50, and now you have all these owners sitting around kicking themselves like, you know, look at all this revenue that we've lost out, we've missed out on. Like, we had them right where we want them, and we threw the players a bone by giving them 57%. And now the owners are sitting around kicking themselves, and they want all that money back. So, I mean, like, that's the situation. And the players are just trying to hang in there not concede everything. You know, one of the things that I find appalling is that there's some really smart people out there And there's really, you know, and veteran hockey writers and veteran NHL people that are saying that Gary Bettman made a mistake in the, you know, sort of the public perception or the PR realm of making that first proposal and coming in at 43%. That's it's the exact opposite. It was brilliant because Gary Bettman, what Gary Bettman has created is he came, you know, came out with that ridiculous first proposal, and then he came up to what 46 or 47%, and then he comes and he and you know Gary Bettman meets in the middle at 50. Because he started out so low at 43, and what the players originally had at 47, Gary Bettman has created this perception that he's met the players in the middle. Gary Bettman started at a place that was unnegotiable. It was ridiculous. But he's come back to 50. So people, like, there's this perception or this sort of, like, people are thinking that Gary Bettman conceded something. You can't concede something that you never had to begin with. The NHL has given in on nothing. Even their latest proposal that has that make whole, even though that the Players Association isn't entirely thrilled with how the NHL wants to do it, even the latest proposal, it's like, what exactly are the owners how are they negotiating? How are they giving anything back? How are they conceding it? Like, if you want the players to come down to 50, what are you giving them back in return? And the answer is nothing. And the owners say, well, take it or leave it. And then Gary, you know, where Gary starts, I think everything up to there was brilliant. Because what you've created now is what he, you know, he's, in a way, very cleverly, whether it's been with help from outside firms that are assisting the league, you know, advising them on you know step-by-step tactics, whatever the case may be, it's cleverly made the players the villains, or it's beginning to make the players the villains in this process, and that's what he wants to do. You know, and you have Sam Fells, like, getting into arguments with players on, you know, Sam, you know, is a smart guy, and Sam, you know, is, you know, this, you know, writing about hockey is his job, it's his business, so it's affecting him in a way that it's not affecting me or some other people, but, you know, you got to look at this thing from with a clear head and know that the players are just trying to get a deal that's fair to them, and I think the players want to be negotiated with in good faith. And up until this point, Gary Bettman's not negotiating with them in good faith. He wants it exactly how he wants it, everything in the owners and in the league's favor, and he doesn't want to negotiate with the players. And if I'm the players, I'm not agreeing to, you know, to what are we getting in return? And, you know, it's like, oh, now the owners won't even talk to him. And then Gary goes out. You know, this is where Gary start. I think Gary is stepping right into Don Fear's hands. Is that he goes and Gary immediately goes and cancels games that are 6 weeks from now. And by the way, Gary finally canceled games, you know, through the end of November, meaning that, you know, and it's what, 26% of the season. So now all those websites that have the old games lost and revenue lost, now they finally make sense. So congratulations to those folks. You have tickers that finally are accurate and make sense. But now that he's done this, it's like, okay, we're going to cancel all games through November. It's like, why? Why would you do that? If you really want to make a deal, why would you do that? In theory, they could have started talking today and had a deal done by Friday. That's not going to happen because Gary doesn't really want to talk to the players. He wants to break them. It's like, what are the points, you know, and then there's this other thing, you know, fans, I get it. You know, you love the players, but you also resent them at the same time. You know, I mean, freaking it's Halloween at the United Center 41 times a year. You have all these players, they go to the games, they get dressed up as their favorite player, they go and root on the team, they live vicariously through the players on the ice, they get that three-hour break from their pathetic lives, and that's the juice that they get from it. And then they go home. And you love the players until you find out what they're making, and then you resent them. But you have to pick a side here, because I see a lot of, you know, I see a lot of people that are angry, you know, they sort of resent the players, like, well, don't they make enough? And then the players are making this issue of escrow and making their contracts whole, and, you know, you have, you know, it's not everybody, but you have the folks out there that are saying, oh, well, what, you know, how much is enough for the players? They make all this money, right? And then the second that you know, the players say, no, we're not making this deal this last week or whatever, the proposal to save the 82-game season, when they say we're not taking that deal, then all those same people, they turn on the players and they say, well, now you're not making anything. That's how stupid you guys are. You're not making anything. It's like, choose a side. Either they're greedy bastards or they're willing to sacrifice money that they're owed. Never make it. Never see that money. Throwing that money out the door to stand up for what they believe is a fair negotiation and a fair deal. Pick a side. It can't be both ways. They can't be greedy, arrogant, you know, jerks. At the same time that they're willingly, don't think that, oh, the players don't know that they're losing that money. Oh, the players don't know that escrow is taken out of their checks. Don't be ignorant. They know. They're standing up for what they feel they deserve, which is a fair negotiation process and a fair deal. Is Jerome Iginla ignorant if they lose this season, what Jerome Iginla is going to have, it's going to be $2.7 million contracts that he pisses out the door. Is he stupid? Maybe. But this situation is bigger than any one player. And as long as they stick together, they'll get something that's fair. There's a lot more at stake than just 50-50 this year. You have a CBC contract that's going to come due. You have a TSN contract that's going to come due. You don't even know where this thing is going as far as online content, because that's NBC and NBC Sports is one thing, but a lot of this stuff, television is shifting to online, and you don't even know really where revenue could go either way, but you don't even know. Like, the players, there's a lot more money to be had, and what the owners want to do is put another artificial cap under the cap to keep the players down. It's just like, you know, there's that one thing in their proposal. There's actually a couple things. It's like the maximum contract of 5 years. It's like, okay, well, that's one thing. Players don't like that. But you know what they really don't like? They really don't like that a year-to-year contract, whatever you sign and whatever your dollar amount of your contract is, whatever your salary year is in the first year, that your contract cannot increase or decrease 5% of that original year in any of the subsequent 5 years, which the owners say, oh, that's to prevent these front-loaded deals with these phony years on the back end of it. But what will it also do? You know, if you're a general manager and, you know, you have this player that you want to keep or you have this player that you want to sign and you have a lot of cap space, Let's just say that this negotiation happening right now, and you're a GM that has a lot of cap space in this coming year, and you really want this player, and you have a dollar amount that you think he's worth per year, but you don't have the cap space over the life of a 5-year deal to pay him that amount every single year, but you can front load it and get him. Well, under this, you know, you can't increase or decrease by year more than 5%. By this, you can't get that player. You're gonna have to get rid of contracts, you know, something or other, you know, to make that deal work for you. So it also keeps player contracts down in that sense. That a player can sign a 5-year deal, but it's not going to grow. So that's another thing, you know, it's like, oh well, this is a great deal. Well, yeah, you want to eliminate the backloaded contracts, but 5% increase or decrease limit, that's not to prevent a front-loaded contract with phony years on the back, or drop-off years, or whatever you're going to call them. That's to control contracts and salary escalation. That's what that is. The players don't like that, and they shouldn't. Because if you're entry levels, they want to be 2 years, unless the sliding system in the first year would still be, I would assume it would be 10 games. So if you play 9 games in the first year of your entry level, then it would slide. So you'd the next year would still be your first year. But other than that, you have a 2-year entry level. And then you come and you're a restricted free agent, and let's just say you're 22 years old, and you're a superstar player. Let's just say you're Patrick Kane, and you're 22 years old, and the team knows that you're going to be a superstar player, you're going to be the best player on their team, but, you know, they don't want to pay you $6 million right out of the gate. And they can't get you to $6 million if they think you're only worth $3.5 million the first year. They can't get you to 6. So you either have to do a 2-year deal, or the player has to sign for 5 years at below, or the team, which would happen in a lot of cases too, it would go both ways. The team would have to overpay him. You know, it doesn't make any sense. That, and Gary Bettman, from an owner's perspective, Gary Bettman still got that stupid $16 million below the upper as the minimum that a team would have to spend on the cap. That's asinine to me. Because if you continue to see growth, that means that these lower market teams are going to continue to overspend to get to that lower limit. What help are they receiving? Because I got to tell you, in the NHL's proposal, they talk about revenue sharing and increase of revenue sharing. And the increase of revenue sharing is 33%. And this is why the players balk at it, and they want to talk about a different system of sharing revenue. And they want to see if they're going to make all these concessions, if they're going to give all this money back, they want to see it go into revenue sharing. And you can't ignore the players wanting to see a new deal that helps all the teams. You can't fault them for that. Because in what the NHL is proposing, yeah, revenue sharing as it's would increase by 33%. But everybody now, like the restriction as it's written, if you go on NHL.com and you read the explanation of the proposal to save the 82-game season, yeah, revenue sharing would be increased by 33%, but the limitations on or the qualification standards for who qualifies for revenue sharing, that clause that you have to sell a certain number of tickets, that would either be reduced or eliminated, plus your Anaheims, your New Jersey Devils, and your New York Islanders, who currently don't qualify for revenue sharing, would suddenly qualify for revenue sharing. So, yeah, that 33% is a little bit of a boost, but more teams are going to have to share it. So there's not really that much more revenue being shared. So again, how is Gary Bettman's proposal really helping the league, other than those big owners that are driving revenue want to pay less for contract? It doesn't make any sense. I don't understand why. I mean, I get it, because Gary Bettman and his people have been very clever, and they've made it seem like they've come very far off their initial demands. And it's like they knew they were never getting that deal to begin with. They knew that 50-50, it's going to be close to where it is. And I know it's frustrating, and I get it. It's frustrating because they're pretty close right now, but I don't see how Gary Bettman's proposal helps all the teams. And it doesn't. I mean, when I first read it, the first thing you look at the proposal and number four, payroll range, doesn't change at all. I mean, for the players, you like it because that means that guys like Ed Jovanovsky and Thomas Kopechki, when there's a team out there like the Florida Panthers that are trying to get to that lower limit, they're going to get escalated deals. And their escalated deals mean escalated deals, the fallout in the subsequent years will be spread around. So that's good for the players. But there's also a problem in here in that, the Rusty Olesh and the Cristobal Huey contracts would still under the new system, would count against the cap. And those current contracts of more than 5 years, let's say Marian Hossa got traded, say the deal got done, the new CBA got done tomorrow, and on Friday Marian Hossa got traded to Toronto. He played there for 3 years and then he retired. The rest of that deal, from that day forward, goes back on the Blackhawks cap. That's the NHL's proposal. And having the Huey contract, this is for any new contract. The Huey contract, under what the NHL has proposed, even if he was playing in Switzerland, would be on the Blackhawks salary cap. So that's another thing that would keep player contracts down, because it's money that teams can't spend on the salary cap. See where, the owners would want it, but the players have to be leery of it because the effect of, that's there's less money there. So, I don't know. I mean, I get it. It's frustrating, but are we today anywhere where we didn't think that we would be on October 29th? No. I mean, we're exactly where we thought we would be. So, I want to transition here. I want to talk about. I would like to thank in my hand, Superstar, and I know you can't see this. But in my hand, I have Jeremy Roenick's autobiography, JR, My Life as the Most Outspoken, Fearless, and Hard-Hitting Man in Hockey.
Wow.
I would like to thank Triumph Books for nothing. Jeremy Roenick's book, on the front cover, maybe some of you have seen it. It's JR in what looks to be, you can't see the logo or anything, but what looks to be what may have been an LA Kings jersey. Can't really tell, may not be anything. On the back is JR, a action shot of him, looks like 1992-ish, in 93 maybe, in a Blackhawks jersey. On the one of the inseams, it's JR posing modern day, looks like, in a Philadelphia Flyer jersey. But, I'm kind of leery about this book, Superstar.
Why is that?
I've only thumbed through it a little bit. I've read bits and pieces of it. Nothing to make any kind of a judgment about the book one way or another. But I'm really concerned about reading this book because I really think the JR is going to come off as maybe some people will laugh about this. He's come off like this for years, but a really insecure, disingenuous guy. And, He does. So I want to talk about specifically a couple things. He does talk about the Tony Amani incident. Of course, maybe longtime Blackhawks fans will remember October 9th, 1999. Phoenix Coyotes, Jeremy Roenick was about 2 years into his stint in Phoenix. Jeremy Roenick came to town. Third period, he slashed Tony Amani pretty good across the face, opened Amani up really good. JR got, I think it was a $100,000 fine and a five-game suspension. There was a lot of talk about what that was over and that, I don't know if I want to read from here. Okay, even though this was the pre-Twitter NHL, this is Jeremy Roenick in his autobiography, there were plenty of hurtful rumors that circulated around the hockey world about what caused that blow-up that night. The truth about what happened that evening was that Tracy was trying to convince me to bring back the man she had married, the one who had been lost in my climb to stardom and replaced by someone she didn't recognize. So Roenick is claiming in his book, and it may be true, but Roenick's claim in his book, and I could go on, but to summarize, is that he had become a guy that was didn't appreciate what the game was giving him and all that, and he got caught up in being JR, whatever that means. And so it compelled her on opening night of the season to storm down into the locker room between periods and scream at Jeremy Roenick, her husband, like in the locker room in front of all of his teammates between periods.
Awesome.
It couldn't wait till after the game. It couldn't be done before the game or at the hotel in the afternoon. It had to be done between the second and third period in the locker room in front of all his teammates.
Awesome.
That's what JR claims in his book. He does say that it took 2 years for Amani and him to talk again. He said that Amani accepted his apology. Roenick says, like, in his book here, he said over and over again, he's like, I did not know when I slashed Tony. Nobody in hockey believes this, but I didn't even know it was Tony when I slashed him. And he says in the book that he doesn't know to this day whether or not Tony and his family believe that, but that is the truth as JR proposes it. I also want to talk about this. At the end of the book, he sort of gets on his soapbox, and there's like a little section here. It says, this is Jeremy Roenick, five players I hated during my career. Number one, and this I'm not surprised by at all, Rob Ray. I didn't like Ray as a player because he took trash talking too far. When I was going through a difficult time in my life, he went way over the line with what he said to me in a game. Based on what he said to me, I lost all fucking respect for him as an NHL player and a person. Jeremy Roenick about Rob Ray. Number two, Patrick Marleau. Now, see, this is something that concerns me about this book. Patrick Marleau. This is the five players I hated during my career, so says Jeremy Roenick. He hated Patrick Marleau. Listen to this. Patrick Marleau. He had all the skill in the world, but not nearly enough desire to take advantage of that talent. I should have had his skill, and he should have had my heart. Because of this, Jeremy Roenick hates Patrick Marleau.
Hate seems a bit strong, but okay.
We should get Jeremy Roenick together with that guy who writes SecondCityHockey.com now. Birds of a feather.
That'd be a hell of a list.
Get JR, that guy, Greg guy, and Jay Zawoski together. Have them start a website. Call it the Bitch Blog. Let's see. Oleg Tverdovsky, number five. I'll skip over the couple. He's got Steve Ott, Roman Čechmánek. But his fifth most hated player during his career, Oleg Tverdovsky. He always thought he was more skilled than he really was, and he put no effort into making himself a better player. That's why I had to kick his ass twice in practice.
Okay.
That's JR. Oh. We were close to having JR on the show once. I wouldn't mind having him on after I read the book to talk to him about it. I just don't want to hear him talk about the CDA. I really wouldn't be able to. I've read some of the stuff he's been saying, and I can't take it. What else were we going to talk about?
I don't remember.
Do you have anything to add of any of that we just talked about?
No.
Okay.
It's a mess, and you know, hopefully they can get it figured out. But the disheartening thing that you mentioned is they're not even talking. I mean, that's you know, from an outsider's perspective, where you know, the only thing we have to gain or lose by this is being entertained with NHL hockey. So, you know, it's frustrating, but, you know, hopefully they can get it figured out, get back to the table, and hammer something out, and we can get some sort of season going.
But like you said, they got to talk. And
they got to talk. I mean,
Gary Bettman doesn't want to talk, so what are you going to do? Gary Bettman doesn't want to talk, and he canceled games that are 5 weeks from now.
Which isn't a good sign.
Yeah. I was out at the Rockford Ice Hog game, as I mentioned before. When I wasn't thinking about my boner, I was watching the Ice Hogs turn things around, superstar. Big week for the Ice Hogs. Four-game winning streak. As they are currently vaulting them into second place in the Midwest Division, in the Western Conference. 4-3-0-1 now are the Ice Hogs in 8 games, sitting behind the Chicago Wolves, 5-2-1-0. 3 points behind them Chicago Wolves. Ice Hogs probably benefited from playing some teams. San Antonio Rampage have trouble scoring goals. They played the Rampage twice this week, both at home, Thursday and Sunday. Thursday night they won 2-1 in a shootout over the Rampage. Last night, 3-1 victory for the Ice Hogs at home. And then on Saturday night they were in Grand Rapids, played a Grand Rapids team that has trouble keeping the puck out of their own net. So maybe perhaps the Ice Hogs prevented from some fortunate competition, but the point is they got some things turned around, especially on, I thought Saturday night in Grand Rapids was, you know, it's kind of a tale of two issues for the Ice Hogs. They've had a lot of trouble this season holding leads, and yeah, they've had trouble scoring goals, but one of the things that this team did very well last year was, you know, and a large part of this group is the same, is they would score goals and they would build momentum off the goals they scored. You know, it's like, you know, I was talking to one of the guys out there earlier in the week, and it was like, you know, they have trouble holding leads. And, you know, a couple of people have said this to me, well, it's hard to win games when you only score one goal. It's like, well, yeah, but if you score the first goal, like, why are you not building momentum off of that? And that's something that this team did last year, and they haven't been able to do really until this week they did it a little bit. But on Saturday night in Grand Rapids, they fell down 3-1. They came back, and they were up 4-3. And then, of course, they gave up that lead. Then they went up 5-4. They gave up that lead, and they had to win it in overtime. Brandon Peary scored the goal in overtime to win that game 6-5. The good thing about Saturday night, though, as I was getting to, is they had 6 goals. They had 6 different goal scorers, which they needed desperately, averaging a little bit more over a goal per game in their first 6 games they played. So that was encouraging. seeing Kyle Beach get his first goal. Of course, Kyle Beach did that for a time during Saturday night's game. Beach was up with Peary and Morin last night, Sunday night, against the Rampage back in Rockford. Beach was back on the fourth line with Flick and Parody. Yeah, I should point out that after we got a lot of response or a lot of reaction to my Kyle Beach rant on the last show, whenever we did that show, we should point out that he was a healthy scratch in both games immediately after that. So, and I asked Ted Den about it last night. You know, I said, was there a message being sent there? And I didn't have a chance to cue the audio before we did the show, but Den, he wasn't going there. He came back with, you know, that they had a lot of bodies, but you know, in all due respect to Ted Dent's response, the bodies that replaced Kyle Beach were, the first night was Philip Parody, who's, you know, sort of the odd man out with all the bodies right now in Rockford. And the second night, Wade Brookbank went in the lineup in front of Kyle Beach. So if there's not a message being sent there, then I don't know what the reasoning would be. Wade Brookbank, you know, God bless him, but he does nothing. So there was a message sent there. There was an unhappiness, like my unhappiness, with watching Kyle play in those first two games in Chicago. And what I've seen, I haven't been able to see a lot of the games. I've seen bits and pieces of Thursday, Saturday. Of course, I saw all of Sunday, but Kyle's looked all right. But not good enough. So we'll see what happens. Injuries, I should get to this. Talked about it on Twitter. Get an article up on the site as soon as I get some free minutes. Nick Leddy. Don't know when the injury occurred. I'm going to try to go back and watch the third period of Thursday night's game against San Antonio again. But Nick Leddy is currently out with a head injury, as I was told. Now, officially, it's being called an upper body injury. When I talked to Ted Dent last night, he called it an upper body injury, but sources indicate that it is a head injury. And Ted Dent listed him officially as day-to-day. Now, it may be minor. Leddy may play. You know, Dylan Olsen had a concussion last year, and he missed three games. I don't know if we've talked about that on the show this year, but Dylan Olsen had a concussion last year. Similar point in the season, too. It was early on. It was a game against the Chicago Wolves at the BMO. He went for a body check. He sort of bounced off a guy, and he fell backwards. He hit the back of his head with his helmet on, back of his head on the ice, and Dylan Olsen missed three games. Officially, that was a concussion. So, I mean, like with any of these things, a guy can have a concussion, he can miss three games, or he can miss three weeks, 3 months. Seems like it's minor. I mean, Leddy was with the team. He went with the team to Grand Rapids on Saturday, and he was with the team and signing autographs yesterday at the BMO. So he's around, but you know, we'll see what happens. Brandon Saad. You know, the one thing I think with the Blackhawks being having more of a presence this year, because they have nothing to do. Stan Bowman and Norm McIver and all those guys. Injury news has been a little bit harder to get, and maybe that's just because I haven't been out there. I saw the first two games in Rosemont, and then I was out there last night was my first night in Rockford since the preseason. I don't know if that has anything to do with it or not, but Brandon Saad had been out of the lineup since October 19th at Peoria, and there really been nothing said about it. And last night I asked, and it's a leg injury. He's had a leg injury. He hasn't skated at all since October 19th. So Ted Dent said after the game last night that Saad's going to start skating again this week, and we'll see where that goes from there. So Saad, the good news is that Saad hasn't been a healthy scratch for five games. He's actually been injured. Saad wasn't playing that poorly, I thought. I didn't see the Peoria game at all. So I can't really comment on that game, but the two games that he played in Chicago, he's just a guy, you know, and You know, you could see with all the bodies, him, even the way that he was playing, you could see him being sat out just to be, you know, for him to watch a game, maybe sit with somebody and you know, just sort of take a look at what's going on out there and maybe do a little bit of learning that way. But obviously 5 games, and he missed Saturday night game. It was actually his birthday. He turned 20 on Saturday night. So when he didn't play Saturday night, that was real fishy. But we found out yesterday it's a leg injury, so there's that. Also, Ted Dent confirmed, not a Chicago Blackhawks signing, it's actually an AHL contract, Brandon Svensson, who was with the team from January 17th on last year, if I have the date right. Brandon Svensson, who underwent shoulder surgery in the offseason for an injury that he was playing with at the end of last year. Ted Dent last night said that the arm injury, which is unrelated to the shoulder injury that he was recovering from, not a real serious shoulder injury that he had surgery on, but he did have surgery. The arm injury that Svensson incurred in September, Ted Dent said last night that he did have surgery. Originally, Svensson was pegged to be out 6 to 8 weeks, which would put his return in late November. Dent said last night that Svensson is skating, but it's not like he has a stick in his hand or anything like that. He's just skating. So probably still looking at late November for Svensson, which maybe, you know, if the labor thing can get worked out, you know, and I've said all along that I don't expect hockey for mid to late December or perhaps late January, if we see it at all. And I don't think there's too many teams that can't afford to lose the whole season because of those signing bonuses. There's just too much money out the door for the owners for certain owners to lose the whole season. So I think we're going to see hockey at some point. I've said all along that I think it'll be mid to late December, possibly late January, but if it can be, if a CBA can be worked out, then probably a good thing for Brandon Svensson, because he's one of those guys that's sort of on the chopping block. Like Ben Yowds. Ben Yowds got sent down to Toledo. I mean, I don't know the specifics about it. I don't know if somebody refused a reassignment, because one of the things is when these guys that have Blackhawks contracts and they have tenure, they can refuse an assignment to Toledo. Like last season, if Alec Richards wanted to last year, he could have refused the assignment to Toledo, and he actually accepted it because he knew he'd go down there and play, and he needed to work on his game. So he accepted it. He knew he'd go down there, he'd get the bulk of the action, and he accepted it. I don't even know all the particulars. I didn't get a chance to talk to anybody last night about it directly, but I don't know with the CBA in transition if it's still an issue or not, but it's possible. Like when I asked Ted Dent last night about sending Yowds down, his response was it's a business. So whether that means that somebody refused the assignment, or whether that's just, you know, with Stan Bowman and all those guys there, they want to see the guys that they've invested in, and I could understand that. But geez, you know, I was watching. It's funny because after the game, I went up to Adam Clendenning. I was going to interview Adam Clendenning because it looked like, anyway, that Clendenning was going to had scored his first professional goal last night. It seemed fishy to begin with, because on the replay, it looked like the puck was going into the far corner and it changed direction and went in the net. And after the game, I guess Clendenning is walking up to me like these other guys are going by and saying, you know, he didn't score the goal, right? And I asked Clendenning, he's like, yeah, it went off Smitty, Ben Smith. And I was talking to him because in the third period with the Ice Hogs up 3-1, Ryan Stanton, who's with Nick Leddy out of the lineup especially, and Dylan Olsen sat last night, was a healthy scratch. The D is down to Lavin, Lebda, Lalonde, Klaas Dahlbeck, and Adam Clendenning. And instead of the veteran, Sean Lalonde, getting a shift on the PK because Ryan Stanton went to the box 4 minutes high sticking. So your best penalty killer and your best defenseman's in the box late in the game. You're up 3-1. And Lebda and Lavin went out to kill the, you know, went out to kill the first shift of the 4 minute penalty kill, and then over the boards came. I mean, I was amazed when I saw it, but over the boards come the two rookies, Klaus Dahlbeck and Adam Clendenning. And you know, for those of you, and it would be most of you that haven't seen Klaus Dahlbeck play, he's a stay at home defenseman. So I mean, it makes sense in his, but to have those two together and not separate them and put Lebda with one and Lavin with the other, or to just put Lalonde with one, even though Lalonde's a mess trying to kill penalties. It was eye-opening to see that, to see those two together and Dent. I mean, his hands kind of forced with Stanton in the box, but still, to see those two guys put together, and it wasn't like Lalonde, I don't think Lalonde touched the ice during that four-minute penalty kill. But those guys did really, really well. And I'm standing there asking Clendenning about it. And I said, you know, you guys out there, you're nervous about, you know, obviously Ted Dent showed a lot of, asking him this question, Ted Dent showed you a lot of, whatever the word would be, you know, and putting you guys out there. And standing like right over my shoulder is Kyle Beach, and he's eating pizza. Kyle Beach goes, "We were all scared shitless." Which was funny, but yeah, Kyle was being a jokester. But yeah, Clendenning will have. I checked the website tonight; they hadn't changed it. But I was also told that that there will be a scoring change from Saturday night that'll give Clendenning his first assist, and the goal from last night should be changed to Ben Smith, although. I know that last year there were several goals, two or three goals that replay showed that Ben Smith clearly had, but Smith would just refused to, like, say anything about it. So, like, Ben Smith's goal totals from last year should have been two or three higher, but he just would never take credit. He would never take credit for scoring the goals. So, you know, that's the kind of guy he is, I guess, but so. I mean, I'm sure that Adam Clendenning doesn't want that, knowing that it didn't, you know, I mean, Clendenning said, he goes, "It wasn't my goal. I went in off Smitty. I knew it." And I said, "Did you know it at the time?" Or, you know, he said, "No." I mean, it was obvious the whole way that it had gone in off him. So I'm sure that Clendenning doesn't want the goal that way, so it'll end up going to Ben Smith. So there's that. Anything else going on in your world, Superstar?
Not really. Pretty boring, man, you know.
Didn't you golf that one day when it was like 40 degrees outside?
I did. It was extremely chilly, and of course, got a little drizzle too, so it made it even more pleasant. And outstanding course. If you are a golfer and you're in the Chicagoland area, Bowes Creek in Elgin, top notch.
What is it again?
Bowes Creek, B-O-W-E-S.
Bowes Creek.
Top notch. When you golf there, it's a semi-private club. And what you do is it's open to the public, but they call it private. Because when you pay for your green fee, that is actually good all day. So it's one of those things that you go play 18 in the morning, come in, have a beverage or two, and then and a burger or something, and head back out and play more golf.
You know, I want to go home and watch the third period of that Ice Hogs game on Thursday, and I want to write about, you know, some Ice Hogs stuff, but I'm really not feeling too well, Superstar. So I'm on the fence right now. Do I go home and put on some sweatpants and get a couple quilts and jump on the couch and cuddle up with the Rutu puppy and Watch me. I got in the mail the other day. I'm back on good terms finally after 9 years or so with World Wrestling Entertainment. I'm back on good terms with those guys. And they sent me a bunch of DVDs, Superstar. And I'm thinking about going home tonight and watching the Macho Man, Randy Savage, my guy, Macho Man, the Ultimate Collection 3-disc set.
Ooh, that'd be a good watch.
This set is packed with more than 8 hours, with 24 matches and extras, including bouts for the Intercontinental, WWE, and WCW championships. A who's who of wrestling greats, including... Oh, the one that I want to see is the match with Bruno Sammartino that I've only seen clips of.
Sounds like you got your nice plan, buddy.
And including the match made in heaven, 1991 SummerSlam wedding ceremony with Miss Elizabeth. The true story behind that wedding, do you remember that from, like, were you watching wrestling back then?
I was, and I don't remember the backstory.
By the time they did that wedding, like at SummerSlam, by the time they did that, they were already legally divorced. By the time that, like, the WWF actually got around to doing that, they were legally divorced. So that was a weird thing way back in the day. But, yeah, I can either watch third period of Ice Hogs Hockey, I could watch 6 episodes of the Duck Dynasty, or I could watch Macho Man Randy Savage, the ultimate Collection.
That's a tough one. I go Macho Man. I go Macho.
I know. I think I might too. I'm gonna go buy myself one of them liters of orange juice, get some eardrops and effervescence, and cuddle up tonight and watch a DVD or two. If you're not doing anything, Superstar, why don't you come on over?
Oh, you know, it's late. I'm old, man. I'm old.
I know. I gotta be at work so early in the morning. Like I walk into the building in the morning, and the doorman, like, you know, he's for a long time, like, he'd see me in the morning and he'd like say something, and I like think of something like sort of funny to say to him in the morning, just like greeting him. But now it's like I walk in the morning and like I put no effort into it, and he's like, you know, getting in early again or whatever he says, you know. And I just like, fuck you, Maurice, you know.
Well, that's a clever witty greeting. I don't know if it is or not, but
yeah.
At least you're acknowledging the guy.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not a morning person. Aside from especially now that I'm not waking up the way that I'm accustomed to waking up the past few days. But I'm not a morning person. And, you know, so Maurice will see me in the morning. Like, you know, it's like 7:30 in the morning. He'll see me. And like, I'm in a mood. And then he'll see me at, like, you know, 11 o'clock or whatever. And I'm like, hey, Maurice, how you doing? Like, hey, buddy, you know what? That's a transformation that I undergo after a pot of coffee.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's going to be it for us. Superstar,
right.
Do you have anything else to say to the people?
No. Good for another one.
All right, everybody. TheThirdManIn.com is a place that you can find us sometimes. You can also get there via puckchatter.com. You get it? Puck Chatter Radio, puckchatter.com, and also blogtalkradio.com/thethirdmanin is a place you can listen to this show, every show, and I think there's some other shows on that website as well. Anyway, Superstar, say goodbye to the people.
Goodbye, people.
All right, we'll be back at some point doing something. I don't know. Probably next week. Yeah, I think so. Got to perfect these outros, Superstar.
Yeah, I know.
We'll go out on a somber note.
I met my old lover on the street last night.
glad to see me, I just smiled. And we talked about some old times, and we drank ourselves some beers. Still crazy after all these years. Oh, still crazy after all these years. I'm not the kind of man who tends to socialize. I seem to lean on old familiar ways. And I ain't no fool for the songs that whisper in my ears. Still crazy after all.
Between your legs.
Yeah, so?
Yeah, I see what you mean. I forgot who I was dealing with.
I'm out there, Jerry, and I'm loving every minute of it.